Thank you. So I appreciate the introduction, and I want to thank everybody that's on the call here who's taken the time to listen to and view our presentation. So with that, before I begin, for the full disclosure purposes, we advise you to consult either SEC.gov or our website where we have all of our filings. We strongly believe that an informed investor is the best investor. So with that, let me begin here. So one thing I want to highlight for you in terms of the company itself, we're different from just about everybody else that you'll listen to. And the reason being is because we have our own money in the company. And I have invested $22.5 million directly into the company. That's not stock options, that's a direct investment. And the co-founder, Myron Holubiak, who's the vice chair of the company, he has invested $4 million directly into the company. So those investments are a reflection of our confidence in our portfolio and our belief in the success of that portfolio once they're introduced, approved, and introduced into the marketplace. So with that, we have late stage assets, Mino-Lok, which was our very first asset that we drug that we actually in-licensed from MD Anderson in Texas. It was invented by the chief of infectious disease there. That's just completed a phase three trial with very, very strong endpoints. The market for Mino-Lok is estimated at worthy at about almost $2 billion, half in the United States, half outside the U.S. We will be unique in the sense that we're the only ones in the market. We're the only ones studying. We're the only drug out there for treating an infected central venous catheter. The phase three data, which was disclosed several weeks ago on a top line readout, indicated that we had very strong results in hitting our primary and secondary endpoints with a p-value of 0.0006, which is just about almost unheard of. So our second, the other asset that we have that's late stage is LYMPHIR, and that is for the treatment of CTCL or cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. It's a drug that we licensed we acquired a license actually from Dr. Reddy's. It's a license with Eisai Pharmaceuticals, and that drug today is awaiting an approval from the FDA. We have what's known as a PDUFA date or an approval date of August 13, 2024. We estimate that the market for this is about $300 to $400 million. This is a rare disease. It's an orphan drug. It's a very small population, but it has some real interesting dynamics associated with it that you'll hear about shortly. So the last asset that we have in the company is a hemorrhoid asset. This is one that we will not be taking to market, but we plan to generate data for it that would indicate that it has efficacy in the treatment of hemorrhoids. And the reason why we have this asset here is because as I always say, in the 21st century, there isn't a single FDA-approved prescription hemorrhoid drug on the market. You have the over-the-counter market, which has preparation H and products like that that are for grade one hemorrhoids, but grades two, three, and four, there's really nothing there at the moment. So we think if we can generate positive clinical data here, we'll be able to out-license or sell this off and monetize it for the shareholders. We're also planning to spin off our cancer drug in a separate subsidiary called Citius Oncology Inc. And that will be a standalone cancer company with LYMPHIR in it. The timing on that is expected to be somewhere in at the end of July, early part of August. So in terms of our management team, as you can see, I call this the Rogues Gallery, but it's really not. We've got a great professional team. Every single person in our company, I need to highlight for you, is a complete and total professional. We do not have trainees, management interns, or anything like that in the company. I'd like to just call out, for example, Dr. Myron Czuczman, who came on board with us He spent 23 years at Roswell Park in Buffalo as the chief of lymphoma myeloma. He published 180 papers while he was there. And then he spent 5 years at Celgene as vice president in charge of lymphoma myeloma research worldwide. And when they merged in with Bristol Myers, he preferred to be with a smaller company. Myron is truly a global KOL. Additionally, once we acquired Lymphere, we did step up and we brought on board, for example, Kelly Creighton as our EVP for all manufacturing issues, Catherine Kessler in charge of regulatory affairs, Nick Berlew, EVP for quality assurance. So, and also our very first commercial person that we have now preparing for the launch of Lymphere is Mike McGuire. And Mike spent a number of years, good number of years at Hoffman La Roche in charge of marketing and launched all their major antibiotics. So, got a great team of professionals in the company with a great deep background. So, let me go into to Mino-Lok. So, Mino-Lok, the phase three trial, which you heard about, we hit the primary and secondary endpoints. The time to catheter failure exceeded expectations. Majority of the patients in the Mino-Lok group achieved overall treatment success. It was well tolerated with no drug-related serious adverse events recorded. So, what Mino-Lok does is it's designed to salvage catheters in patients with infected bloodstream infections. So, Mino-Lok addresses the complications and discomfort of remove and replace. So, what happens here is if a patient is has a central venous catheter implanted, and that catheter over time, usually these are long-term situations, over time, if that catheter gets infected, it's a very serious problem. Their only standard of care today is to surgically remove the catheter and replace it with another catheter, two separate surgical procedures, which are really, really painful and very difficult for these patients to get through. So, as I said before, the market here is in excess of $2 billion. So, catheters are a lifeline, and it's very important to realize this that catheters are really, really crucial for severely ill patients. They provide medication, pain management, and nutritional support. Most of these central venous catheters are in they're in given to mostly cancer patients, and they'll be implanted for months at a time, and in a certain percentage, as you'll see, they'll get infected. The bacteria, when it forms in a central venous catheter, it forms something known as biofilm, and biofilm is the best way to describe it is it's bacterial slime that forms on the inner walls of the catheter. The bacteria have an affinity for plastic. So, remove and replace has limitations to it. There's first of all a limited availability of vascular sites, and that is sites that sometimes the patients will run out of sites, and that'll cause them to be treated with what we call homebrew, that the solutions that the hospital mixes up. There's a lot of complications associated with remove and replace, 18 to 20% complication rate. Also, adverse physical and psychological symptoms in a higher percentage. There's a high cost associated with this. We're estimating somewhere over $10,000 for the cost of a remove and replace procedure. And the cost, overall cost for treating what's known as CLABSI or CURBSI, central line associated bloodstream infections, where catheter-related bloodstream infections can run anywhere from 46,000 to 65,000. So the market itself here, the market opportunity or potential market, is significant in the sense that there are, first of all, there are 7 million central venous catheters implanted annually. 4 million of them are long-term, greater than 1 month in the U.S. And out of that, we're estimating about 500,000 of those get infected, resulting in associated mortality and morbidity rates, as you see there. So, Mino-Lok is is something that basically is easy to administer. So if you see the patient sitting there with the lines hooked up, the catheter lines hooked up, going soap, there is usually they're hooked up by the subclavically by the collarbone, and they're directly to direct it towards the superior vena cava in the heart. They go right to the heart area, and using Mino-Lok is relatively easy. It all you have the nurse has to do is come in, inject the catheter into that with the solution. The line itself gets locked, so I need to highlight that this does not go into man. It sits within the catheter and a line, and it sits there for 2 hours. At the end of 2 hours, the nurse will come in, aspirate out the contents, and then basically flush the line, and the patient can resume and have 22 hours of uninterrupted IV flow. So this is really critical in terms of that catheter access is really important for the patient, and that's what makes this drug really, and what we do here, very unique from anything else that's ever been tried. So we had a phase 2B trial. We went to the FDA with the results of that. We've received an approval for a phase 3 trial with an active arm of Mino-Lok solution, plus the control arm would be what we call a home brew. And the home brew is where what happens in hospital settings is, especially with patients that run out of access sites, the hospital will try to salvage the catheter with incomplete results sometimes, but nevertheless, a lot of times they'll mix up something with another antibiotic. They'll try it. Sometimes they have to keep that solution in for hours at a time, which really makes it incomplete when it comes to comparing it to keeping the catheter line and everything open for 22 hours like we do. So the primary endpoint on the trial was a comparison of time to catheter failure. The treatment time was 6 weeks. We did several, three interim analysis with an independent monitoring committee. Every time they looked at the data, they recommended continuing ahead. The clinical trial sites were in the United States and India. So the results, as you can see here, were outstanding. The primary endpoint times were easily met at with a p value of triple 0.0006, which is extremely positive. All the secondary endpoints were met also in terms of greater percentage of patients in a Mino-Lok arm achieved overall treatment success compared to the control arm. Safety profile with the drug was very well tolerated with no drug-related serious adverse events. And the reason for that is because it doesn't go into man. This drug does not go into man, but we did have to record other adverse events associated with the overall CLABSI CURBSI treatment. So with that, we need to highlight this for you that we do have a special status with the FDA, which is really important. First of all, we're categorized as having QIDP, Qualified Infectious Disease Product. And the important point here is that our review time, once we submit that NDA, will be reduced from 12 months, as most drugs have, to 6 months. And we get an additional 5 years of market exclusivity upon approval, combined with the Hatch-Waxman approval. So that's really critical because that type of protection is actually better than having patent protection. We also have a fast track designation, which expedites our review, and a rolling review as well, so which allows us to submit sections of that NDA once we start to file. We have a supplementary protection certificate for the EU that extends patent protection up for 5 years. So with that, let me move into LYMPHIR, which is our cancer drug, which is close to an approval. With that, I think it's important for everybody here to just see what this looks like. This is an awful disease. It starts out at the plaque stage, and it's normally seen by the dermatologist at that point. It's characterized by severe itching. And as you can see, it is incurable. It's a T-cell lymphoma that most of the time it doesn't involve the skin and affects men more than women and appears mostly in patients in their 50s and 60s. Once it enters into the tumor stage, it then is under the purview and treatment of the oncologist. And this is, as you can see, that tumor stage is it's awful to look at because it can be also be disfiguring as well. So what separates our drug Lymphir from just about everybody else in the market, there are two other main competitors, is that we target the IL-2 receptor site. And basically, what that means is it eliminates something known as immunosuppressive or Tregs. Tregs are white blood cells that surround the microenvironment of a cancer cell. And the MOA that we have is one that we do reduce the Tregs. And that has an important implication in something else that I'll describe shortly. So, the market itself, 300 to 400 million, as you can see. The primary two competitors are Pfizer Seagen with a drug called Adcetris and Kyowa Kirin, which is a Japanese company with a drug called Poteligeo. So we again, we're none of these drugs are curative, including ours. But I should highlight that the pricing in this category is about $300,000 for a course of therapy. So the market size 300 to 400 million. It's a good size for us to go into. And what we believe is, and our understanding is that once we're launched, this is not like the typical market penetration models or the behaviors that you would normally expect. In that we're not going to be taking market share away from anybody. We're going to be additive to the market. And the reason being is because it is non-curative. And what that oncologist is doing, he's going from one to the next. There's no standard protocol here that says it's a one, two, three in that order. The oncologist likes to use everything they can in order to keep the patients, extend the patient's life, as well as make them comfortable. So we ran a phase three trial. That phase three trial was in 302 patients. So that elite. Or pardon me, not 302. That was study number 302. It had 71 patients in a main trial and 21 patients in a lead-in trial. So the data that came out was positive. That showed an overall 36.2% objective response rate. Nearly 49%. Nearly half the patients experienced a partial or durable response. So, with that, 84% had a reduced skin burden. We had a very rapid response time of 1.4 months and a durable response of 6.5 months. So, as far as safety signals and side effects, no evidence of cumulative toxicity. And most patients experienced a low grade one or two treatment. Side effect related side effects. So there was capillary leak syndrome, 6%, infusion reaction, 6%, nothing with visual impairment. And this is a paper that was published in recently in a peer review journal called Frontiers in Immunology. And what it did is it compared our drug combined with something known as a PD-1 inhibitor. Which is PD-1 inhibitors or cancer treatments, which Keytruda is probably the most well-known one of being a PD-1 inhibitor. And this study was an animal trial. And what that animal trial showed was that combining our drug with a PD-1 inhibitor was more effective than any of the drugs by themselves or monotherapy. This has important implications, and as a result of this mechanism of action that we have. There were investigator-initiated INDs at University of Pittsburgh and University of Minnesota. Let me just highlight that for you. The one at the University of Pittsburgh is being conducted by an OBGYN slash oncologist. He's looking at treating all female solid tumors in female cancer patients. And his protocol is he initiates Lymphir treatment to lower the Tregs, followed by Keytruda. And a reason why this is important is because Keytruda's overall efficacy is impacted by the number of Tregs. So the higher the Tregs in Keytruda, the less the efficacy. By lowering the Tregs in Keytruda, it'll make Keytruda more efficacious. So this trial is underway. The investigator has applied for a presentation of his data in the fourth quarter. Hopefully, we'll have a data readout of some type earlier than that. We also have an investigator-initiated IND at the University of Pittsburgh, pardon me, University of Minnesota. That's where it's being combined with something known as CAR T, which is another form of cancer treatment that has been increasing in popularity. Both of these are represent upside for Lymphir. Also, we have the opportunity that once we're out in the marketplace, we will be looking at expanding the indication or getting usage of the indication for peripheral T-cell lymphoma, which is a much larger market segment. So this drug has good legs to it, and should produce great results for the company. So the what we plan to do with Citius Oncology is we'll have an oncology-focused company that will be separately trading from the rest of Citius Pharmaceuticals. The SPAC that's acquiring it is 10x the Kane acquisition. It has already conducted evaluation of Lymphir, and done by an independent outside group, and they value the asset at $675 million. So we'll be issued 67.5 million shares at $10 a share at the time of the acquisition, which would be right just at the same time as it starts to trade. So with that, with a PDUFA date of August the 13th, 2024, we plan to commercialize the drug in October or mid-October in that time frame. So Halo-Lido is our hemorrhoid drug, as I described for you earlier. This drug has a lot of potential, but it's really made for a company that would have a large sales force and it'd be familiar with direct-to-consumer advertising. Once we get great data, we'll be able to monetize this for the shareholders. In terms of where we are right now, our last cash position was on 3/31 that we published, but we did raise $15 million in April of 24. As I highlighted before, we've invested $26.5 million. Myself and Myron Holubiak are among the largest shareholders. We have 180 million shares outstanding at the moment with 72 million warrants. Again, somewhere around 10 million of those warrants are with Myron and myself. So all in, fully diluted, 269 million shares. And the reason we're doing the spin-off, I should explain this also, is that we don't want to dilute the Citius shareholders with the operating expenses associated with the launch of Lymphir. So the operating capital for the launch of the drug will be through Citius Oncology Inc., which we plan to again launch in October. So with that, we do have a little bit of time for some questions. Ashai?
Thank you so much. Thank you for the presentation. I really appreciate your time here. I would like to just remind everybody in the audience that if you want to ask a question, you can put them in the Q&A function at the bottom of your screen. With that, I will start with one of the questions that I have of my own. What does the launch timeline look for Lymphir domestically and internationally?
What was that question?
Well, launch timeline look like?
So the launch timing on Lymphere is we're planning to launch in October. We will be working with a company called Eversana. Eversana is a contractor to the pharma biotech industry. So they will provide us with the salespeople. They'll be on their payroll, but they'll carry Insidious Oncology business cards. They'll also do all our on a contract basis, all our shipping, billing, and warehousing. We've been working with Eversana for the past year. We've done a deep dive into this market. We think that we can launch this with about roughly somewhere between 20 and 25 territories, and that would be a mix of sales reps plus medical service liaison reps. And we're working with Eversana in terms of that recruiting process. We've already started to bring people on board from the marketing side. And as I highlighted before, Mike McGuire has come to us from with a Hoffman LaRoche background. We also have a director of marketing who came from Regeneron. And within the past couple of weeks, we recruited a national sales manager who was with Kyowa Kirin, the company that launched Proteligo. So our assessment of this market is it's a great market for us to be in. It's a great opportunity, but at the same time, we're going to be providing a benefit to the patients overall, which is critically important in this.
Thank you. And can you also discuss the cost involved in the launch of Lymphir and what will you be requiring to add additional capital to your WIP for the launch?
So for the launch of it, so what we plan to do is we will that capital will be secured through Citius Oncology Inc. We will not dilute Citius Pharma with it. And I should also highlight for the shareholders that the plan is that ultimately we will distribute the shares of Citius Oncology Inc. to the Citius shareholders. That will not be right away. You have to give that some time to get maturity in the trading. Make sure there's a market there and that you don't get slammed when you dividend those shares out.
Great. And while we are at Lymphir, I just have another question from the audience, which is, you mentioned the cost of Lymphir is about 300 to 400K per treatment. Would that be covered by the patient's insurance? And what percentage would be covered?
So what I said is the market itself is 300 to 400 million, and the cost is 300,000 for a course of treatment. And because the other two entities, three entities, are already out there, they're already covered. So we will not have to go through. I mean, we have to apply and get listed and so forth, and that occurs once you're approved, and we will have reimbursement for the patients that we're assured of.
Perfect, thank you. And now I would like to change the line of questioning to Minoloc. So, when adopting Minoloc, what are the changes that the physicians will need to adopt?
So Minoloc, in terms of the standard of care, what will happen there will be ultimately the Infectious Disease Society of America publishes guidelines on the treatments of CLABSI, CURBSI, and infected catheters. So once we're approved, what's been indicated to us is that guideline will a new guidelines will be issued, and that will change the standard of care at that point. There'll be a modification to it. So those once those guidelines are issued, the hospitals pretty much go along with it.
Right. And can Minoloc be used for prevention, or is it only for treatment?
No, so just to be clear about that, this is for treating an infected catheter. This is not about preventing the infection. So it's important for everybody to realize that. That is not our market, the prevention market.
Okay. And can it be used in all infected catheters, or what percentage of the infected catheters do you expect to capture?
I missed it.
I can repeat that. What percentage of the infected catheters do you expect to capture, and can it be used in all infected catheters?
So, ideally, we would like to have it. We would anticipate use in all the infected catheters. But as far as what percentage we would use, and so you know what the market is about 500,000 infections. We think this tends to be underreported, so there may be even a greater number. So our goal is to penetrate the market and basically get every one of those patients in the long run. So that's a ramp up. There'll be a ramp up process.
Thank you so much. And we're about time for our presentation, but thank you for coming to the Sidoti conference, and we really appreciate your time here. Thank you, everybody in the audience, for being such a great audience. Thank you.
Thank you also, everybody. Appreciate your time. Thank you.